We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TIC FM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we're pleased to be joined by Josh Jabal. He is Commissioner of the State Department of Administrative Services. Good morning to you, sir.
Morning.
So for people who might not be super familiar with state government, tell us what DAS does for starters.
Sure. Well, we provide a wide variety of essentially the business functions of running the state government. So for example, we're responsible for the state's technology, procurement functions, everything we buy, human resources, all of our real estate and facilities, management of the state fleet, and a variety of other kind of smaller functions, but I'll give you a bit of a sense of the types of back office support that we provide that enable all the other state agencies to do their jobs effectively and hopefully save as much money for the taxpayers as possible.
That sounds as if it could be a bit unwieldy.
It can be, but we've got a great team, and it's important, in any large organization to have, great people helping you and helping to drive the missions forward in those different groups.
Now, you were appointed by Governor Lamont after he took office, and you don't have the typical background that many commissioners do. You don't come from politics. You come from business and IT, right?
That's correct. Yeah, I've spent almost my whole career in the technology industry at companies big and small. So I worked for 11 years at IBM. It's about as big as it gets. In fact, about 6 or 7 times larger than the state government. So not a stranger to large bureaucratic organizations. But also on the small side. So I was CEO of a small software company here in Connecticut that we grew pretty rapidly and then was acquired by another big company. So the common theme, though, is using technology to help make the world around us a better place.
Now, just under a month ago, the governor announced plans to streamline the state's human resources functions. Tell us about that.
Sure. One of the things the governor talked a lot about during the campaign, he also comes from a private sector background, as I'm sure you and many of your listeners know, was trying to bring some more private sector best practices to bear on how we run the state. And one of the things he talked a lot about was the fact that, we've got, 30 or so kind of state agencies providing, a wide variety of services from, DOT, looking after our road, transportation infrastructure, to Department of Corrections, running our prisons, and so on and so forth. Today, most of those agencies provide a lot of their business support separately. So as an example, for human resources, almost all state agencies today have their own human resources department. And so you can kind of quickly imagine the inefficiencies that that creates with people working to write policies, manage the workforce, recruit, all kind of reinventing the wheel in each of those agencies. And so one of the things the governor thought would be logical was to combine many of those business functions, to bring them together and give us the opportunity to create critical mass, to specialize, to get more efficient at what we do, also to reduce the cost of administering those processes and help reduce the state's cost structure overall. So we spent the first several months of the administration analyzing that, meeting with the commissioners, meeting with the respective folks in the agencies, and trying to build out a plan and make sure that did in fact make sense, that there wasn't something we're missing. We know the government is different than the private sector in many important ways, but what we ultimately concluded was, in fact, it did make a lot of sense, and the hypothesis was kind of proven out. So We announced that a couple weeks ago, as you mentioned, and now we're in the implementation process of bringing together about 350 human resources professionals that are currently scattered about state government, centralizing them, specializing, and driving efficiency over time.
So do they become part of DAS as opposed to their current agencies?
Yeah, that's correct. Most of them will. A slice of the group will who handle labor relations matters will be reporting into the Office of Policy and Management, OPM, who has statutory responsibility for labor relations. But the majority of them will become part of Administrative Services Department. They'll be moving into our offices at 450 Columbus Boulevard and all the excitement associated with that.
Now, if you've applied for a state job versus a private sector job, the process has been different if you've done this in the past, probably more paper than electronics in some cases. How will that onboarding process change?
Sure. There's a number of changes, some of which have already been implemented. So actually the person that we appointed as the new Deputy Commissioner for Human Resources as part of this consolidation, Nick Herms, has been with the state for several years. He's actually driven already some significant transformation in how we recruit externally in terms of using more modern online tools and job postings that actually make it a much more attractive experience for people applying, creates a much better first impression too for people. That's important when you're out looking for a new job. But we're also, as you allude to, going to be really re-engineering how once someone accepts a job offer, we all know how important the next phases are in terms of how they're onboarded, what their first impressions are once they join. There's been a lot of research that shows those first impressions actually go a long way towards determining how long someone ultimately stays in a job. So that's important. Today, a lot of the onboarding is very manual, very paper-based. I'm a new state employee. I joined about 6 months ago, and I walked in my first day, and I was presented about an inch-thick stack of papers that I needed to complete with pen, wet ink, filling out the stuff that normally I think when people join a new company now they're doing online, filling in your address and your direct deposit and your dependents and all that stuff. It's all paper-based today. So we're looking to bring in a more modern experience where people can self-service a lot of that stuff. Again, not rocket science and stuff that I think a lot of your listeners will be listening to and saying, gosh, I already do that at my place of business. But governments generally are a little slow to adopt new technology. Connecticut is no different, I think. So we've got a lot of opportunity to improve.
Certainly, this will provide for a better experience for the new hire. Will it also save the state money in the long run?
Absolutely. So, again, when you think about these paper-based processes, it's the time wasted by the new employee kind of filling them in, but then the paper gets pushed across to an administrator who then has to sit at a computer and keywack all that information in. That's wasted time. When people are manually entering data, of course, it's more prone to error and so this is one small example, but then you blow that out to the scale of the state of Connecticut and you think about all the things that we do that are manual, that are paper-based, and the opportunity we have to digitize that, to move those forms online, and the time that will save and the fewer number of people that we'll need to administer all these processes. And yes, it'll add up to real savings. It's not going to be a big bang, but it's a lot of singles and doubles that we need to string together to generate real savings.
Now, as you noted, you've been on the job for about 6 months now. I'm guessing you've had a chance to kind of kick the tires of the agency and see how things work. What was the most striking thing you found?
I think there's been, a lot of, to a large extent, it's kind of what I expected, I'd say. I've been very pleasantly surprised by the fact that I think a lot of the challenges that we have are very similar to challenges I've seen in the private sector, both at companies I've worked at as well as clients I've served over the years. So the good news there is I don't think we have to go create lots of new technology or invent new approaches or processes for doing things. I think we really can adopt a lot of private sector best practices and software products that are already well established in the marketplace and get a lot of value out of that very quickly. So that's really encouraging. It's definitely an environment, though, where it is more challenging to manage. I think the managers in the state, do a really great job, not having access to a lot of the tools that managers, in the private sector have, the ability to reward high performers, to hold low performers more accountable. It's not as easy to do that in state employment. So we really have to, work harder to work with the workforce to get done what we need to get done.
Now, in terms of rolling out the streamlining of HR processes in state government, where do you stand now and what's the timeline for implementing everything?
Sure. So we announced it a couple weeks ago. We are going to be doing all the detailed planning to be ready to go live with the new organization probably towards the end of this year. That'll be the kind of go live date and then we're off and running.
Now, in terms of your experience in the private sector, if you come across a challenge, I'm guessing you have contacts you might be able to reach out to and say, oh, I know someone who knows how to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's not just me. There's a lot of people who've come into this administration from a wide variety of different backgrounds. I think the governor has done an incredible job of assembling a cabinet and an inner circle staff of people with a very complementary set of experiences. So we've got some people who've been in state government for a while, who know their way around, know how to get things done, know how to get bills passed through the legislature. And then there's a lot of people like me who come from the private sector from a variety of different directions, who bring networks of people who haven't historically been as involved in the state government, but who I think, you know, are interested in helping. You know, I've been really impressed by the amount of people who I think historically have not taken much of an interest in state government and have raised their hand and say, I want to help. I want to serve on a board of commission, or I want to be involved in an advisory group to help solve a hard problem. People are very generous with their time. I think people understand that it's an important time for the state of Connecticut, that we're, you know, we're bottoming out, you know, kind of some long-term fiscal challenges that have accumulated over the years, and taking the right steps to get the state going for long-term growth. And I think people want to roll up their sleeves and help with that. I'll tell you, the governor and his wife, they have an unbelievable network through their careers. They know just about everyone. So if there's ever someone we need to try to get to get some help with something, there's the odds are either they or someone in the administration knows how to get it done.
And in terms of people, how important is that institutional knowledge in state government, especially when you're dealing with HR?
It's very important. You know, I think it's the state's an organization that's been around a long time. It has its norms. It has its ways of doing things. It's got its relationships, people who've worked together for many years. So it's critically important, and it's an area where I know, you know, people like myself coming in new is a blind spot for us, right? Not knowing our way around as much. So I think it's been important for me and for many of us to spend a lot of the first months on the job listening and learning and not coming in and assuming we know all the answers to everything. I've tried hard not to do that, and also to surround yourself with people who have been around and know how to get things done.
You are listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Josh Jabal. He is the commissioner of the Department of Administrative Services. Challenges. What challenges do you face in implementing this new HR strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I think whether it's the HR strategy or change generally in the state, you know, the challenges are, you know, when you think about government generally, right, and compare it to, you know, most of probably what your listeners are used to in the private sector, certainly my own experience, private sector, you know, you have to compete, right? You have competitors, your customers have other options, and you have to go out every day and find a way to get better, to add more value, to innovate, or else if you don't, over the long term, you know, your business model is not going to work out. You know, you're going to go bust, and everyone's going to lose their job. And you know, that kind of competitive requirement creates a sense of urgency in people, I think, to be willing to take risks, to be open to change. Not for everyone, but generally speaking, government doesn't have that, right? Government doesn't have a natural predator, right? That's on its heels to try to take its customers. And I think that, you know, often will create a sense of complacency, right? And a view that, you know, the status quo is kind of good enough. It's been that way forever. We can just keep doing it that way. And so that's what we need to overcome. And, you know, that's really the biggest challenge, I think. You know, I think the good news is we do have a lot of people in state service who have the right mindset, that are excited to change, that you know, I think are embracing a lot of the new ideas that we're bringing in the Lamont administration. You know, we also have this dynamic where there is going to be a lot of change in the workforce no matter what, in the sense that we have about a third of the state's executive branch workforce is going to retire in the next 3 years. So there's a clause in the state employee contract that was signed back in 2017 that changes the formula for the pension COLA calculations. I'm getting a little into the weeds here.
Cost of living, yeah.
It's important to appreciate that that formula changes on July 1st, 2022. So if you're retirement eligible on June 30th, 2022, you can leave with a much more advantageous COLA formula for your pension. If you stay that extra day, it gets whacked pretty good. And so, you know, most of the people we've talked to who will be retirement eligible have confirmed they've done the math. They've all got their spreadsheets for their pensions, and they're going to retire. So we're going to have a third of the workforce out the door in the next 3 years, which is a huge risk, a lot of institutional knowledge that we'll be losing. But it's also a huge opportunity, right, to reshape how we do things, to look at the types of skills we need, to look at the work that we do and determine whether some of it maybe isn't as important today as it was once upon a time, or there's software that we can use to get things done that we don't need to throw bodies at it as much as we have in the past. So it's a really exciting time and opportunity, actually, for people who like to think about the kind of GORPY work of running a big organization like this and how we can do it better. And so there's a lot of work going on now to start to plan for that.
So a lot of people have that date circled on their calendar. Is there any concern that you're not going to be able to find the qualified personnel to fill those positions that you will be filling?
Absolutely. It's a major concern. We have to, as I said, rethink, how many people we'll need to refill. Given our budget challenges, obviously the less the better. But at the same time, we know there are a lot of roles that we absolutely need to refill. There's roles that cannot be substituted with software, where you need human beings on the front line doing, critical service work, looking after neglected children or, providing protective services, state police, for example, right? So there are big challenges associated with that. It's a very competitive job market right now. Unemployment's very low. When I think about the types of skills that we need in DAS, particularly like in our technology organization, people who have, modern technology skills are unbelievably in demand right now. And I think the equation that we offer in terms of the culture of the state workforce is not well aligned, candidly, with what those people are looking for. I've hired hundreds of those folks over the years in my professional career. I have a very good sense of what they're looking for. And the state value proposition around, high job security, right, is not really what those people are after. They know they can get jobs anywhere. They're looking to work in a dynamic work environment. They're looking for flexibility. They're looking for, a really challenging group of people to work with that are going to excite them. They're looking to be rewarded when they do a great job. And so we don't quite have that equation right today, but, we're in discussions with our teammates in labor about changes we might be able to make to improve that equation and ensure that we can attract and retain the type of workers that we need for the next generation.
Do you think some of that is marketing?
Sure. Yeah, we've done a poor job marketing ourselves. I mean, I think if you think about any other $20 billion organization like the state is, usually they'll have a very large sales and marketing department that spend all their time talking about how great your products and services are, right? We obviously don't have that in the state. We have a small tourism budget, I guess, right? It's really a drop in the budget. I think that in the bucket, I think that team does a good job with what they have, but we do a very poor job of selling the state generally, I think. All of the incredible things that we have to offer, the quality of life, the educated workforce, the great schools. I'm from the shoreline. I mean, I think the Connecticut shoreline is is a national treasure. It's unbelievably beautiful, especially this time of year. And so we don't market the state well. And I don't think we haven't historically marketed state employment as well as I think we can either. I think a lot of people who are in state service now do it because they care about serving their fellow citizens, right? They care about making a difference in their communities and giving back. It's why I took this job. I know it's why the governor ran for office. So I think there's a lot more we can do to play up the value proposition of serving your state.
Talking about technology, it seems that for decades now, the state has been trying to upgrade its technology and get all the systems talking to each other. How's that going?
We've been making some progress, I think, over the years, but there's so much more to do. This is often a bit of an afterthought in the state. It's hard work and it's complicated work to really adopt new technology and to get value from it. And so, we're actually in the process right now, given the governor's, intense focus in this area. I was chosen for this role specifically because of my background in technology. We're looking at several initiatives we're kicking off now to modernize the state's technology infrastructure, one of which, is around the services we provide to businesses in this state. So today, if you're starting a new business, for example, you have to figure out mostly on your own how to navigate a number of state agencies that you have to interact with to register your business, like the Secretary of State, to get a tax ID number at Department of Revenue Services, to register with the Department of Labor if you're going to have employees and the requirements associated with that. If there's occupational licensing associated with the business that you're starting, you're going to be interacting with the Department of Consumer Protection, and on and on and on. Today, that's a bit of a burden on business owners to figure that all out. And so what we're looking to do is put in place a system which we're likely going to call the Business One Stop, where people can funnel into that site and get in one place all of the services and interactions with all those different agencies that they need to be able to get those tasks done in a much more modern and user-friendly experience that people have grown to expect when they're doing things online, right? I think a lot of online shopping sites, a lot of our banks have trained us on how easy it should be to get things done, how intuitive it should be to get things done online. And so we're going to be looking to bring more of that experience to not just businesses, but citizens as well in the years to come.
So, for example, if you're registering with the state, only having to provide your name and address once as opposed to, you know, five times at every different agency, something like that.
You got it. So, again, I mentioned before I was the CEO of a small business here in Connecticut, a software company. I tell people an anecdote that when I became a state employee, I have a password manager, like a lot of people do, like a password vault on my computer that stores all my passwords and, you know, scrambles up unique passwords for every website. Anyway, I got my state email, right? And so I set up my email and my password for my state email. My password vault suggested when I first hit that state website, 8 different possible usernames and passwords associated with my prior experience as a small business CEO of all of the different state websites that I had to create a unique username and password for to interact with them. It's exactly what you're talking about. That's crazy. That shouldn't have to exist in this day and age. We should have one user ID and password. We log in, we're recognized. The state knows so much information about us already. We shouldn't have to rekey ever what's our address, what's our social security number, what's our driver's license, number, or when's the renewal due. All this information we already know as a state. We should never have to ask you for that. We should be able to be proactive about reminding you when there's a renewal coming up, giving you the services to be able to renew those types of things, you know, from home online, rather than having to go into an office and grab a number from the deli counter number generator there and wait in line for an hour or two. It's not the type of user experience people expect today, and it's not what we want to give them.
What's the oldest technology still in service you've heard about in state government?
Oh, gosh. You know, there's a lot of systems out there that still have the old green screens. You know, there's a lot of very old technology out there. By the way, that's not unusual for a large organization. I think many people would be somewhat surprised to go to some of the large banks or large companies and see how antiquated some of their kind of core technology is as well. Again, we give ourselves a hard time, but, you know, in many respects like that, I don't think we're all that different than any big organization. But again, it's just, I think, a point that there's a huge opportunity for us to kind of leapfrog a few generations of technology now and bring, you know, much more efficient modern tools to bear for our employees and for the citizens and businesses of Connecticut.
You know, I think I saw a story about U.S. minesweeping ships still running on Windows 98 or something. So certainly Connecticut's not alone.
No, not at all. Yeah, there's some stories out there like that are a little terrifying, actually. We do have a lot of work to do, though, here in Connecticut as well.
When you took this job, what was the feedback from people you knew in the private sector?
it was a mix of wondering if I'd lost my marbles to gratitude, I think, for being willing to accept the challenge. I think, you know, all of us who serve in state service do so because, you know, we care about our state and our fellow citizens, and we want to give back in some way. And I'm greatly appreciative of the people that I serve with who many of whom have other choices about doing things and making more money elsewhere, but are willing to, at least for a period of their career, you know, serve the state. I think it's a great experience, very gratifying. And, I think a lot of my friends and colleagues appreciated that.
Anything new we can expect coming out of DAS in the next 6 months or so?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So much we're working on. I think a lot around the technology side of the house, as I've been alluding to, a lot of new initiatives you'll see kicking off and starting to deliver incremental value that businesses and citizens of this state can see and appreciate, giving new and better tools to our employees as well to help them become more productive. But there's a wide variety of initiatives we have across all those different functions I mentioned that have a common theme, right? They're really looking to bring modern best practices to bear in how we run the state with the goal of providing the highest quality services at the lowest possible cost.
He is Josh Jabal, Commissioner of the State Department of Administrative Services. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.